there's a drought in New York City. Coca-Cola has a contract to bottle New York City water. The city is the brand that they use, and it's one of the best at Queens. I've been trying to find out if the contract is suspended during a drought. Two members of the city council passed the buck. So did the city comptroller. At the mayor's office of contracts, three different people passed the buck. At the DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, three people passed the buck. The public advocate's office told me, we just see complaints. So, things have to get really bad before anyone will even pay attention, never mind do something. Let's hope the drought doesn't get worse and we have the same situation as California, where Nestle was taking their water away even during a drought. Courts won't help. Wording on a contract seems to always overrule things like morals and ethics, or life and death. Many WBAI shows have noted the passing of Lillian Pollack last Wednesday morning, 9 days after having a stroke. She was 101, but was so busy that there's an overwhelming feeling that she died too soon. She was active on many political and social issues, and knew Leon Trotsky well enough while he was in New York to have been later invited to his home in Mexico. When she was 93, she wrote a novel about those days called The Sleeve Stream, which is available online. The Sleeve Stream. She was a member of the New York Metro Raging Grannies and wrote some of their songs. She was also a member of the Granny Peace Brigade, Women in Black, and many other groups. There will be a memorial in about 3 months, I hope. I'll be around to mention on Ecologic. Now, I linked all the following articles on the EcoLinks page of the Ecologic website, www.ecoradio.org. Once again, the military is talking about environmental issues. Several newspaper reports on July 29th mentioned a study showing 18 military sites were threatened by climate change. Congress is overruled by fossil fuel and nuclear and won't help the military reverse this climate problem. Several times, the Pentagon has called climate a major security problem for the U.S. And in a possibly related article, ReaderSupportedNews.org has an August 5th article from Scientific American by Andrea Thompson. The article was on climatecentral.org before it was on the Scientific American website. In 1959, the U.S. dug Camp Century, a bunch of tunnels into the Greenland Ice Sheet, about 125 miles from the northwest coast. It was originally to test the feasibility of a missile base against the Soviet Union, but the idea and the camp were abandoned and expected to be buried deeper and deeper in the ice with every winter snowfall. But the global warming part of climate chaos is uncovering, eventually exposing toxic and radioactive material. Meltwater will reach the site even sooner. Complications from climate chaos get worse and worse the more you know. More reasons to stop burning fossil fuel, stop using nuclear power, and more reasons to stop wasting energy and to make energy with renewables. How about some good news? Today was a New York City Council vote to ban the use of fracking waste. I want to especially thank United for Action for spearheading that fight. Congratulations on that victory. You can activist UFA, go to their website, www.unitedforaction.org, unitedforaction.org. They meet every month at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, 64th Street of the Central Park West. UnitedForAction.org will tell you when it exactly. And how about some more good news? This from NewtResister.org, compiled from reports in the South China Morning Post and GlobalTimes.cn. Thousands of residents of Lianyungang, a port city in China's eastern Jiangsu province, took to the streets for 4 days of anti-nuclear protests, from Hiroshima Day, August 6th, through Nagasaki Day, August 9th, over health and safety concerns about a uranium reprocessing plant to be built there. As a result, it was, quote, suspended, unquote. Even with the government control over the internet in China, social media was largely responsible for the size and success of that protest. The New York City Friends of Clearwater free concert and monthly gathering is this Friday, August 19th, starting at 6:30 p.m., 239 Thompson Street, just south of Washington Square Park in the Village. I'm the featured speaker this month, and I'll be talking about why I am not a my-way, right-or-wrong person. We don't have to rationalize wind turbines killing birds when there was a way to keep that from happening. When wind farms are put up badly, it sets the entire wind industry back, and we can't afford to do that. So it's this Friday, starting at 6:30 p.m., 239 Thompson Street, just south of Washington Square Park in the Village. And if you want to read the full articles I just summarized, I link to all of those articles on the EcoLinks page of the Ecologic website, www.ecoradio.org, ecoradio.org. And our Facebook page is WBAI Ecologic, no spaces or dashes, WBAI Ecologic. And please click like. For more environmental news, go to www.ecoanchornyc.com, theenvironmentgb.com, biologicaldiversity.org, or ecowatch.com. Archives of Ecologic are all over the internet. Between ecoanchornyc.com and WBAI.org archives, theenvironmentgb.com, and my own permanent archives, there are dozens of episodes available for you to listen to or watch. There's a direct link to all those shows on the past test page. www.ecoradio.org is the main Ecologic page. And we'll get you to the past guest page, the EcoLinks page, and my own permanent archives, ecoradio.org. When your air or water is clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. No sin. And I'm celebrating my 25th anniversary of WBAI here in 2 weeks. I still feel like one of the new guys. I started out as a DJ playing hard rock in the middle of the night. Then I was interviewing artists and writers in the comic book industry. And then Ecologic started in 2002. My guest would be Don Stein of New York City Friends of Clearwater, and a very frequent guest on Ecologic. David Donovan, who might very well be Nufset's biggest fan of the comic book show. Max Keane, who was my operations person for more than any other operations person. And Adina Menji, who is the person who got me onto WBAI in the first place 25 years ago. So that's in 2 weeks. Tuesday, August 30th, 8 p.m., WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org. So, Ted, introduce yourself.
Okay, my name's Ted Glick. I have been active on primarily the issue of the climate crisis since about 2003. Before that, I've been active since the Vietnam War on a whole variety of issues. I was the national campaign coordinator of a group of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network that works in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. until I retired about a year ago. I continue to work with a group called Beyond Extreme Energy, and also for the last dozen years or so, I've been a leader of a local Green Party group in northern New Jersey, the Essex Passaic Green Party. Those are my main qualifications to be on the show, I guess.
Andrea? Well, Ken, thanks for inviting me to join you. I sort of came out of the civil rights movement, so I do a lot of work around the idea of justice, climate justice, economic justice, social justice. Right now, I'm the executive director of People Demanding Action, and probably one of the things that our group was able to do that is something that I'm most proud of is our board of directors and some other folks from the climate area. We were able to draft a zero climate emissions bill, which was introduced in Congress in December by Representative Raul Grijalva.
Congratulations. Ted or Andrew, you could do this whole show by themselves, and together it's going to be a dynamite discussion. And, you know, mainstream media does not talk about environmental issues when they talk about the election or when they talk about the candidates. Why do you suppose that is?
This is Andrea. I'm going to jump right in. When you look at the mainstream media, it is pretty much owned basically by six organizations. It's not like mainstream media was 25 years ago, where you could go into any city, and in that city, it was the people lived in that city that basically controlled the media. Now you've got these giant communication corporations that are controlling all the newspapers around the country, television stations, and radio stations. So basically, they all pretty much do the same thing, which means because they have advertisers in the fossil fuel industry, talking about climate change is something that mainstream media has no desire or stomach to do.
Yeah, I think Andrea is right on target. That has a great deal to do with it. What we need, really, in terms of presidential candidates and other candidates are people like Bernie Sanders, who a lot of the times when he was being interviewed in the debates, he took the initiative to put out primary, particularly the climate issue. That's something that he goes way back with. It's very important to him. I'm sure if Jill Stein had the kind of support that Bernie Sanders had in terms of across the board, that she would be doing the same thing. She doesn't have the same level of support that he did. So, by and large, that's not happening, I guess, or not anywhere near as much. That's what we need. We really need candidates who are willing to break through, who see the importance of environmental and climate issues and can raise them to kind of deal with what Andrea is, I think, very accurately putting forward in terms of what's going on here.
Well, Ted, I want to add that, again, you are working with the Green Party. There is so much complicity between the two parties, meaning they both get money, Democrats, Republicans, from the fossil fuel industry. So the parties themselves don't really want to tackle issues that could anyway negatively impact their money. And I think that's probably why people found Bernie Sanders to be such an incredibly refreshing candidate. Here was a man who wasn't owned by anybody, who was willing to stand up and tell the truth.
You know, it's going to be interesting to do the show because, of course, WBAI is a 501c3 organization. And so we can't be perceived as endorsing a candidate or recommending a candidate, but we can talk about issues, which is what I'm steering this toward. And today, I had a half-hour argument with one of my very best friends about basically the definition of wasting your vote. Are you wasting your vote by voting for the lesser of two evils, or are you wasting your vote voting for a third party? And it was a heated discussion that went around and around. And I have noticed that the Republicans have a third party that they're pushing, and the Democrats have a third party that they're kind of pushing if they're disgruntled with their candidate. And did either of you have a point of view on the definition of wasting a vote?
I definitely do. Andrew, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go?
Oh, no. I want to hear what you're thinking, Ted.
Okay. Well, as I said, I have been active 16 years, actually, with the Green Party in Northern New Jersey. That's primarily where I have my connection locally and to some extent through the state of New Jersey. But I've also had a position going way back to about 2003, 2004 that I've written about and spoken about. I've always believed that the Green Party is important because it has been articulating a vision, a set of issues, putting forward candidates, et cetera, that by and large just aren't out there otherwise. As small and relatively weak as it is, it's still been important. I've always seen, though, that what we ultimately need is something that involves the Greens, it involves African Americans, Latinos, progressive sectors of labor, gay and lesbian, et cetera, kind of a whole, basically kind of the rainbow coalition, kind of a mix, that that's what we need in terms of social change, political change, political revolution in this country. And I believe it's really critical that the Green Party, I have believed that it's critical that the Green Party appreciate what it is and what it isn't. It is not a party that is anywhere close to being like the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. It just isn't anywhere close. And so when it runs a candidate for president, I've been advocating, and I've been continuing to advocate, and this is in the minority, this is by no means the dominant position in the National Green Party. I've been advocating what I've called a safe state strategy. It also goes by other names, but it essentially would have the Green Party concentrate its resources when it's running a presidential candidate in the states where it's very clear that either the Republican or the Democrat is going to win, based upon past voting results and kind of current polling. And that in the swing states, in the states where it's close, the battleground states, that there should be a very upfront position to the effect that the Green Party recognizes that the person who's going to win is going to be either the Democrat or the Republican. And in the U.S., it's a state-by-state electoral process with the Electoral College. So that in the battleground states, that the Green Party should be saying people should vote their conscience. Look at the situation, consider what you feel is the right vote to take, and then do it. And some people absolutely will go ahead and vote in battleground states for the Green Party or for a third party because they feel so strongly about, you know, the problems with both parties. And other people will vote for the Democrat, most likely. To me, that's an approach that makes the most sense in terms of the kind of electoral system we have. I hope that there'll be a time at some point in the future when a really, really broad mass movement, again, pretty much like what we saw with the Sanders campaign, comes together as an ongoing, kind of like a third party. I don't think it'll be completely a third party. Certainly at first, I think it'll be a mix of progressive Democrats and independents. To me, that's the approach that makes sense given the reality of this country and the way its electoral system works right now. When we change it, maybe things can be different, but that's going to take a while, too.
It's a very interesting way of looking at it. I'm a lifelong independent. Actually, I'm more of a socialist than anything else. So for me, I have lifelong petty problem with both parties, and periodically I vote for either one and sometimes neither one. I completely go third party. What's interesting is what is going to be the aftermath of the Sanders campaign, this notion of our revolution, which is doing exactly what you suggested, Ted, bringing together progressives of all stripes, the labor movement, to basically lay out a platform and then look at what is it going to take to advance that platform, gain traction, and ultimately political power.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think what's coming out of the Sanders campaign along those lines and other things too, you know, the People's Summit that happened in Chicago that was led by the National Nurses United. 3,000 people, a whole mix of folks, you know, very much multi-issue, work, you know, great speakers. It was very important, and I'm not sure where that stands at this point. Probably most people are really involved in working to defeat Trump. That was certainly the perspective of that grouping. But, yes, I agree, Andrea, with what you're saying. I think that's very important.
The People's Summit is very actively organizing and putting together the next steps. I was one of the conveners of the People's Summit. So you will be seeing many more, much more from the People's Summit. It may be definitely after the election, and we will be working very hard to ensure there is no lame duck vote on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So that is probably one of the most timely and important issues that anyone who considers themselves progressive should really be working on. Because if we end up passing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, then our ecological goals are basically out the window. It becomes a moot point because whatever laws we pass, if they in any way, shape, or form are going to limit a corporation's future potential profits, then we are either going to be sued like we were with TransCanada, or the law is going to get overturned the way we overturned country of origin labeling on meat. And those were very weak ISDS, or investment state dispute settlement clauses, in NAFTA and WTO. They are much stronger in the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
And TPP would give thousands of corporations the ability to sue less of the future loss profits rather than the hundreds that NAFTA allows.
Yes, and the other thing with the Trans-Pacific Partnership is it's a docking agreement. So originally there are 12 countries that are in it, more countries bringing in more multinational corporations would be able to join.
Okay, you mentioned that you're trying to stop it from being a land grab vote. And I was thinking about what Ted was saying about Bernie Sanders being really the environmental candidate for most of the primary season. And yet, really nothing that Bernie Sanders people proposed to the Democratic Party climate
Number of things got in. There was a very strong importance of climate change plank that got in. There were a number of things. What a lot of people that are very progressive were aware of, the big things that did not make it in. Single payer did not make it in. Again, the healthcare industrial complex and the strong opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership did not make it in. There were a number of concessions that were made to progressives that actually got in the platform. We had a number of people on the platform committee.
Yeah, some of the specific ones that I remember, one of them was essentially a climate test that when it came to government agencies, federal agencies, that the federal government generally, that in terms of various policies, various actions taken by agencies, that if it involved energy, that there needed to be assessment of the impact on the climate of a policy if it was not renewable energy, so it's kind of general, but that was one thing that was agreed upon. There was language to the effect that of opposing drilling for oil and gas in the Arctic, and I'm almost certain off of the Atlantic coast, not the Gulf. The Gulf was not touched, that was not included, so that there's still an open, in terms of the platform, it's still fine as far as the Democratic Party to just keep destroying the Gulf and the Gulf Coast states and so on. And there was a very interesting part of an amendment that came that called for a convening within the first 100 days after Hillary Clinton would take office, if that happens, for the purpose of really looking at how to enact the kind of a World War II style mobilization. Bill McKibben has just written yesterday, really, a very fascinating, very good piece in the New Republic about how we need to take this seriously, that essentially climate change is kind of like fascism in terms of the impact that it's having. It's a little bit of a stretch for the analogy, but in terms of the effects of climate change, if we don't get a handle on it very everything I know. So there were some positive changes there.
Yes, the notion that we are in a climate emergency, yes.
What about the Republicans and Libertarians? What do they have in primary?
Yeah, I actually looked up, because I really didn't know where the Libertarians, where Gary Johnson is, and William Weld, where they stand. And I was surprised how lame and weak it was. I mean, it's really virtually nothing. What they talk about, first of all, it's like you go to the website, you try to find out what they said. It's just very minimal. They talk a lot about market-based, and that is very much the Libertarian Party's approach to a lot of things. Market-based, as if we have a free market in this country, as if, you know, major corporations are not totally distorting a quote-unquote free market. I know from experience, actually, when I ran for the U.S. Senate as a Green Party candidate in 2002, and there was a Libertarian Party candidate, I learned about that. They have this kind of strange analysis of how the economy works, as if corporations almost didn't exist. So they talk a lot about that anything that we do about the climate needs to be market-based. They essentially punt, are very weak when it comes to even agreeing that global warming is happening and it's caused by humans, human beings, human society. It's virtually, they're neutral on that in terms of their language. And I guess the most specific thing that they say, they say, quote, we need to prevent future harm by focusing on regulations that protect us from real harm. So, you know, again, it's like real harm as if, you know, regulations, some of them are not really protecting us because the harm's not real. It's extremely weak. It's incredibly weak. I was a little surprised because there definitely are, I know, some Libertarians, some Republicans who see the need, who believe that there is a market-based way to deal with the climate crisis, essentially through a carbon tax that would be revenue neutral, you know, through either reducing taxes on something else to, you know, kind of balance out the kind of tax from carbon, or through a dividend, through returning the money that's raised through a carbon tax to kind of everybody with a social security number. I mean, that could fit within the Libertarian framework, but there's nothing there about that. So they're pretty bad. And as far as Trump, I mean, you know, the guy, yeah, just briefly on Trump. I mean, you know, the guy's so all over the place, and you don't know what's real and what's not real, what's a lie, what's not a lie. So it's kind of hard. I mean it's clear, though, that he's basically totally into fossil fuels. He wants to bring back the coal industry. He wants to cancel the Paris Agreement from a year or so ago, which was, you know, not very strong anyway. It's basically voluntary agreements by countries. There's nothing mandatory, no penalties if countries don't meet their targets that they voluntarily put forward. But he wants to cancel that. He would definitely decimate the Environmental Protection Agency, a whole attack on regulations in general, and definitely the environmental regulations. You know, the one thing that was interesting, might have been when he was in Colorado, he made a statement to the effect of that indicated support for local communities that vote to keep fracking out of their town or their city or their county. He kind of gave the impression that he would support that, and I think in that context he made some statement about we do need to. He talked about how, you know, we can't get all caught up in this climate. It's a hoax. It's not really real. You know, there is no real climate crisis. But there was something to the effect that we do need to address air and water pollution. So hopefully we will not have to find out, you know, what is real and not real about Donald Trump. He really is a grave threat, and he absolutely can't be elected president. To me, that's really critical. But you know, that's kind of what I that's what I've been able to kind of do a little bit of research on in terms of where he is.
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about what Donald Trump is or is not doing or saying.
Have you looked into the Libertarian Party at all?
Actually, I look at the Libertarians. They are our very dear friends when it comes to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They are our reliable no votes on the really bad trade deals. In many instances, it's for what to a progressive would be a lot of the wrong reasons, but then they do have that right reason of this is really all about corporate control of everything. It really has very little to do with trade. My son is a libertarian, so we used to spend quite a bit of time arguing over what libertarians did and did not believe. And again, he is very solidly into these market-based solutions, but also very solidly against corporate control of anything other than the individual corporation itself. So very, very interesting what libertarians do and don't believe. And there's quite a bit of variation.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I mean, there definitely are libertarians who are, you know, essentially much more progressive, and then there's others who are not. And from what I can see in the little bit of research I did do about the Gary Johnson campaign, he does not look, and his campaign does not look to be like as if it's the progressive wing by and large. Although I'm sure on some other issues, you know, the libertarians actually are probably okay. Maybe even pretty good on some other issues, but certainly on issues related to climate and environment, they are really, really weak.
Andrew, you mentioned that you were working hard to keep a lame duck TTV vote from happening. How are you doing?
Correct.
How are you?
Well, there are a lot of petitions, so if you have an email address, I am sure you have seen a petition about no lame duck vote on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There's the Secretary Clinton, use your influence, make sure there is no lame duck vote. I know before that, before Secretary Clinton became the nominee, there were petitions to Nancy Pelosi saying make sure there is no lame duck TPP vote. There will be many congressional visits, and then they will be back in district for all of October. So this is really where the fight must be, because if we are going to see a vote on the TPP, it would most likely be in the lame duck. Nobody wants to run on their TPP vote, so it won't be before the election.
Explain what lame duck is.
Well, the lame duck is the period where you are immediately after the election, so now you know who's going home, who's going to stay, and it is before they seat the new Congress. So they call that the lame duck, because there are some people where they're just not going to be coming back. And it's really kind of sad when you're on Capitol Hill and it gets to be the latter part of November and December. The members who are retiring or who have lost their seats, they basically get moved down to sort of a great big pool in the basement of the buildings, and that's where their offices are. And, you know, it's just a big, giant room, and it kind of reminds you of some 1950s office scenario, but all the people there are people that are members of Congress with their that.
So do they get vengeful because they lost?
Some do. I mean, members of Congress really are human. So some, if they lost their primary and are not even going to have an opportunity to run in the general, can be a little bit angry at their constituents. And then others are just like that. So members of Congress, they're not all geniuses. There are many smart people in Congress. There are many people in Congress who were born wealthy and are good at raising money, and that is their total skill. And people everywhere in between.
So they're the people to watch out for, or they're the people to ignore for us?
They're the people to watch out for, especially if they were kind of on the fence. They weren't strongly opposed, but maybe we got a no vote out of them. There were 28 Democrats in the House, and that's really where a fight is going to be in the House. There were 28 Democrats in the House that voted yes for fast track. And some of them claimed, well, you know, it was a procedural vote. I just wanted to give it a chance. Horrible, horrible decision. Because once you fast track a trade deal, that means it can't be amended. So anybody walking around saying, oh, yeah, we're going to improve it. No, you're not. Because what is currently in it can't be amended thanks to fast track. There's 20 hours of debate, and then it's an up or down vote. So by giving us fast track, basically the whole idea was make it easier to pass. So that's why I said it's going to be a really big and a very important fight.
So people should not ignore these positions that come in to their email?
No. You should sign every petition that comes in asking your members of Congress the advocacy alert to oppose a lame duck vote on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If they don't vote on it, then obviously it won't pass. Now, President Obama has already signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. All we're waiting for is for President Obama to tell Congress, now it's time to vote on the implementation procedures, at which point, if Congress delivers a yes vote in both chambers, President Obama has already signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That thing is here. There is no fixing it. It is what it is. Yes.
Well, you know, I don't actually, I'm glad to be, hearing Andrea. I know about TPP, and I know about the good work that many groups are doing. I did want to ask, though, I've actually looked, not real closely, but I definitely have looked kind of closely at the difference between Jill Stein and Hillary Clinton when it comes to positions on climate and environmental issues as reflected in their websites. And if you wanted me to do that, I could take a few minutes just to highlight those differences.
Sure.
Okay. Where I'm coming from is as somebody who very much is in agreement with, you know, many, the vast majority of the positions of the Green Party. I think they're very solid and strong, and they come out of many, many years of development. But I'm also somebody who thinks that it's really important that Donald Trump not be elected. Jill Stein is not going to win. No way. No chance at all. There are states, actually, like New York and like New Jersey and like Connecticut and maybe even looks like Pennsylvania, if things hold up, where the likelihood is extremely high. It's virtually a lock as of now, and most likely as it gets close to Election Day, that'll stick, that Clinton's going to win in those states and win pretty big. And in situations like that, people who believe that the Green Party's positions are definitely superior to the Democratic Party's position, then I think people should definitely consider voting for Jill Stein. But in terms of reasons to vote for her, as from an environmental standpoint, in terms terms of issues. You know, comparing, you know, if people go to the two websites and compare them, you know, the Clinton positions are not bad. You know, they're definitely in the right direction. Some of the stuff is pretty good. 500 million solar panels installed by the end of her first term, and enough solar panels, she projects, in 10 years so that every home is powered by solar panels. I think it is, well, that's a good question. It says 500 million solar panels installed. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I would assume more, but you never know. You know, various other things, cutting subsidies for oil and gas companies, talks about cutting methane emissions, although she's not in favor of banning fracking, which is definitely a problem. Talks about environmental justice, climate justice, and so on. So, you know, the general direction is pretty good, but there's at least six areas that Jill Stein is just much stronger and certainly to the left of the Democratic Party, which is what you'd expect. The Green Party calls for the creation of 20 million jobs by transitioning to 100% renewable energy by 2030, as well as investing in public transit, sustainable agriculture, and so on. That's absolutely the scale that we really have to try to push for in terms of a chance of not being just overrun, basically, by the climate catastrophe as the world changes, it keeps heating up. So I think the level that's what we need to shoot for, that level of ambition. Secondly, the Green Party calls for energy democracy, an important concept based on public, community, and worker ownership of our energy system. Treat energy as a human right. That's definitely kind of an idea to the left of where the political discussion is. I think that's an important one. Very much, and this is a big difference with Hillary and Jill Stein, the Green Party calls for an end to fracking, tar sands development, offshore drilling, oil trains, mountaintop removal, any new natural gas pipelines and uranium mines, halting investment in fossil fuel infrastructure. That's very important. Yes, absolutely. We can do that. Then
Hillary Clinton wouldn't get the money.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Other than climate, Jill Stein, the Green Party position, calls for banning neonicotinoids that are threatening the survival of bees and other insects, other pollinators. Calls for labeling GMOs and a moratorium on GMOs and pesticides until they are proven to be safe. And then finally, very explicitly supporting organic and regenerative agriculture, permaculture, and sustainable forestry.
And there's a couple of questions that you're going to ask.
Sure, that's it. That's it.
Okay, when you were talking about 100 days, World War II's conversation on climate, won't Wall Street try to stop that in every stage of the way?
Sure. Well, they're trying to stop stuff that's nowhere near that. I mean, really, they're trying to prevent, you know, people from getting a decent return on the solar energy, right? You talked about that at the beginning, right?
So Hillary is the president, and if the platform says to do that, then Wall Street's going to stop it. So did anything good happen in that 100 days?
Well, it depends upon the movement. It's not going to depend upon, you know, the goodness of Hillary Clinton or who she, you know, even who even she appoints. Totally what the movement does, right? It can't be a honeymoon for Hillary Clinton. You know, we got to pick things right up right after the election, and particularly with the TPP at first in terms of the lame duck.
If the Republicans, if there are so many disgruntled Republicans that vote for the Libertarians, so many disgruntled Democrats that vote for the Green Party or for right-in Bernie Sanders, and neither candidate gets 50%, does the Electoral College still put in whoever?
Well, the 50% doesn't matter at all. I mean, Al Gore won the popular vote back in, I'm forgetting the year. He won the popular vote. He got 500,000 more votes. So it's all the electoral college. It's all the elections are state by state, right? They're state by state to the electoral college. That's how things happen.
And one of the things we did not talk about was election integrity, which is another one of my big issues. We already know we witnessed stolen elections in 2000. We witnessed them again in 2004, and we definitely witnessed a number of them in this current primary. So the question becomes, how honest will the 2016 election really be?
And give us some good friends to hear about this one. And here, what's the website?
www.peopledemandingaction.org. www.peopledemandingaction.org.
Okay, your website?
Well, my personal website is just myname.com, tedglick.com. And in terms of my primary climate work, it's the beyondextremeenergy.org.
Thank you, Andrea, and thank you, Ted, for the quite stuff that we're going to have for another hour.